to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. When you think of native grasslands, you probably think of the wide open prairie in southern Alberta. But native grasses once covered the vast plain between Grand Prairie and Peace River. That's what attracted settlers to the region in the first place. Now, plant ecologist Annette Baker is trying to find what pockets of native grasses may still remain. Her work with the Alberta Conservation Association also contributes to that of Cameron Broach and Margot Hervieu. Cameron is studying the decline of the plains' sharp-tailed grouse, and Margot that of northern butterflies. All are dependent on native grasslands for their survival. All this coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. Standing beside the gravesite of gold panner 12-foot Davis, which overlooks the mighty Peace River and the town of the same name, I would never have guessed this is an historic spot for yet another reason. But this is one of the last remaining areas of original native grasslands of the Northern Plains, the Grand Prairie. I'm following plant ecologist Annette Baker of the Alberta Conservation Association. As she walks through the tall grass, she periodically bends over to brush her hands across the tops of the plants.
This little guy here is alum root, and it has a really nice big flower spike that's got some yellow flowers on it. This guy's a vetch, and we've probably got some prairie onion and some nodding onion here as well, that when you crush it, it smells exactly like onion.
Still looking for that porcupine grass.
Oh yeah, we haven't found that yet. It's quite unique, and you'll really know it when you find it. It's got a really long awn on it and a long seed that you can actually play darts with. So that's kind of fun to play around with. I pulled him apart, but he's a three-flowered avens. He's got a few other names too. It's prairie smoke or old man's whiskers. And when you see the flower, it's all those names apply.
How do you know that a spot has native grasses on it and a spot that doesn't?
I guess when we go, we know there's some species that indicate, I guess, a more native site or a better, more healthy native site. There's some spear grasses that we, or needle grasses that we look for, needle and thread grass or porcupine grass or a green needle grass, and that's one of the first that disappears out of there when the native grassland has been impacted. There's also non-native species that we look for, like smooth brome grass, which is really invasive, and when you find that, it seems to take over a patch quite rapidly. It spreads through the rhizomes as well as the seed. And another one that we look for is Timothy as well, but Kentucky bluegrass, which it also seems to take over. And it's one that you use in your lawn. So you'll find an area that looks like a lawn, and there's not a lot of diversity. So I guess that's another thing we can focus in on as well, is there lots of different grasses here, lots of different flowers, and if so, you've probably got a good chance that it's more native than the ones that have been impacted.
Why are you looking for native grasses up here?
Because no one believes that we have any, and historically, I guess, there was a substantial amount of prairie up here, and that was the first area that was cultivated naturally. It was easier to get in there and fulfill your homesteading requirements rather than breaking the bush. And so lots of it's disappeared, and we're figuring there's less than 1% of the original stuff that's actually left. And when we started the project, there was only one quarter section that we knew about, or that people actually said, oh yeah, there's that one. And we wanted to know if there was more out there than just that particular area.
You were showing me a map back in the office, and it's incredible the amount of land that there was before. I think you said in the millions of acres?
Yeah, some of the historical, it's not really concrete information, but from the early survey that happened in the early 1900s. It's somewhere, different surveyors had different estimations, but they figure it's between a half to 1.4 million hectares in the Grand Prairie, Spirit River and Fairview areas. And yeah, there would probably only be a few hundred hectares left now.
Where would you find those?
There, I guess the bigger areas are often associated with areas that they couldn't cultivate, so they're either rocky or on hilly areas, like too steep of a slope, or little pockets that they couldn't get the equipment to or were kind of in an awkward part of the quarter.
Aside from the grasses for their own sake, what else is dependent on having the native grasslands around?
One of the things that we're investigating at the moment is the relationship with butterfly species up here. We find some species that are only found here. One of the ones that is found at this site is Pike's Old Whale Swallowtail, and it's only found in the Peace Country. And there's other ones that this is the furthest north or the furthest east or the furthest west that you actually find them. So it's kind of a neat local area that you'd normally find them, say, in the southern prairies. So butterflies are a big one. We had some researchers last year or this year that came up, and we're finding moth species up here that never knew existed up here, and that's a big black hole also, and they're thinking that there is a relationship between some of the moths and the native grasslands as well. One of the other ones is the wildlife that come in, so the sharp-tailed grouse, and we've also seen deer and moose at the sites as well.
What things have surprised you?
I guess initially it was the diversity that you find at these sites. When we did the species list over all of the ones from last year of all of the different plant species, it was, I don't know, something like 150 different plant species that we'd actually had to identify. So that's a whole lot. I guess the willingness of some of the landowners too of just learning what they have out there, and a real void or vacuum because they just don't know and don't know where they can access that information. So they're really keen to find that. So that's been a pleasant surprise as well, I guess.
Now that you're finding what is out here, what happens in the future? What should we be doing?
Well, that definitely was the first question we had to ask, was what's out there and what conditions it's in. And the next step will be working with interested landowners in some voluntary stewardship of these areas. So hopefully this winter we'll be able to get together with some of the ones that have expressed some interest in it and see if there's some programs or something that we can help them with, so that we can actually ensure that these grasslands stay. Lots of the sites that we went to were really small as compared to, say, in southern Alberta, where they can do large-scale stewardship programs where you're talking about full quarter sections of land. Lots of our areas are fractions of a hectare in size. And so some of the programs that have been developed down there won't be as applicable up here. And so that's going to be important to figure out what will actually work for them. And it may be anything from them saying, you know, we're not ever planning on breaking this land, or can you help us so that we can ensure that non-native species don't take over, or can you help us with a burn so that we can get rid of those shrubs, to, you know what, I want to make sure that this stays here for posterity, and look at doing conservation easements or donations of land. But that, again, because it's such a small area, is harder to manage because it's part of a whole bigger quarter section rather than the whole quarter section being native. So that's going to be our challenge, I guess, for the coming years to figure out what'll work. This particular one that I've just picked up now is that elusive porcupine grass. And you can see it's been named appropriately. It looks like a porcupine's quill. It's quite long and can actually get quite a lot longer, and has the white and black striping on it, and has this really long point, which you can see actually works quite well as a dart. Oh no, that's porcupine grass too. When it dries out and ready to go into the soil, it has a bit of a spin on it. And when it goes into the soil, this You can see how it's spinning like that. It'll actually drill itself into the soil, and that's how it'll get ready to get itself, plant itself, I guess.
Thank you very much.
You're more than welcome.
I was speaking with Annette Baker, a plant ecologist in the Peace River office of the Alberta Conservation Association. One of the species greatly affected by intensive agriculture on the plains between Grand Prairie and Peace River is the plains sharp-tailed grouse. Cameron Broach is a wildlife technician with the Alberta Conservation Association, and one of his projects involves going out at 4:30 in the morning to track the elusive bird.
It was identified probably in the mid-90s that there had been a sharp decline in sharp-tailed grouse throughout the province of Alberta, and we didn't know a lot about anything up here in the northwest region yet.
What did they look like?
Well, they kind of a pointed tail to them. They're a light color. Sometimes some people confuse them with the rough grouse, but obviously there's a difference in the sound and everything during the spring mating season.
Are they a type of grouse that is found pretty well all across Alberta or just in certain pockets?
Really, it was a lot to do with the native grasses and everything. So southern Alberta still has some, you know, good pockets of sharp-tailed grouse. And up here in the northwest, when there used to be a lot of native grasses and before a lot of intensified agriculture, we used to have some high densities of dancing grounds.
Well, why do they need the native grasses?
They utilize that as part of their whole... They utilize a kind of mosaic of habitat. They require some shrub cover. Native grasses, because it's idle, provides very good cover for them for nesting and raising their brood.
When are you most likely to find them?
Usually when we do surveys is their peak breeding season is in April to mid-May, and that's when we're out at sometimes 4:30 in the morning trying to listen for their dancing grounds, which we also call leks, and we listen for their different acoustic calls and sounds and cork notes and we listen for these noises, and we try and determine where their dancing ground is.
What do they do on that dancing ground?
Oh, it is a foot-stomping edition of kind of the old stampede wrestling type of thing. There's usually the dominant male is in the center of the lek, and all the other males are trying to get a piece of the pie in the middle. And what happens is they're sometimes head-to-head, bouncing their chests off each other sometimes, but they're facing off trying to establish their own little territory. The center territory is the one where the dominant male is, and that's where the female will come, and they will breed there. Kind of like that, you know. It's the soundtrack for sharp-tailed grouse. Kind of like the and then you got to get the foot stomping thing. This is when their tail feathers kind of do a little rattling, and then you hear them go like this. Oh, that's my change in my pocket. Hang on a second. They don't do that. And then you got the gist of it.
What is it that you've really found out about these ones now that you've been looking at it?
I guess what we found here is, like, we didn't really have a lot to go on first, so we had some information from the 60s, and it said, wow, there used to be sometimes some of the highest, concentration densities of dancing grounds per square mile type of thing back then. But since then, we hadn't found hardly any. So out of 56 historical lek sites identified, you know, from since the 60s and 80s, only 3 of those 56 are actually active today. We've expanded the surveys, and we found areas up everything from Fort Vermilion, Grand Prairie. We're finding that there is numbers of them spread throughout the Peace Country, but a low number of birds on each lek site.
What comes next for you?
Well, first of all, what we've done is we've mapped the area, so we have an idea of kind of their general, the land use around all these dancing grounds. And what we want to find out is why are there higher concentration of birds here as opposed to other places. So from that, we've determined that if a lek site has within 5.8 kilometers squared around that area, if there's less than 25% cultivation, you're going to have a higher number of dancing grounds in that area type of thing. And what's left now is we probably want to incorporate some of the stewardship program, working with local landowners, and maybe identifying, hey, here's kind of basically the life cycle of the sharp-tailed grouse. A lot of them know already what they, you know, what's wrong and everything, but just a matter of maybe lending a helping hand and maybe establishing the odd pilot project with certain landowners and trying to incorporate some idle land.
So when you go out at 3 in the morning to try and find these lek sites, do you have to make calls yourself?
No, we don't make calls ourselves. Usually wait for the wind to die down, and we just, once you hear this sound, it is unmistakable, and you're stopping at certain areas just listening for, you know, 3 to 4 minutes, and once you hear them, then you can narrow in your search, because they'll return to that same dancing ground year after year after year. Some shifting may occur, but some have been, like, for years, like 10, 20 of year, the same exact site. They know where to come to.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was Cameron Broach. He's a wildlife technician with the Alberta Conservation Association in Peace River. Among the suite of research projects associated with the remnant native grasslands of northwestern Alberta is that of butterflies. Biologist Margot Hervieu took me out to one of her sites at the Kleskin Hills, just east of Grand Prairie. And one of the first orders of business was a quick demonstration of butterfly net technique.
What are we going after?
There's a yellow sulfur over there. You can see it's just cruising madly, and it's going to be impossible to catch, I expect, today. It's going a lot faster on this wind than we're ever going to get. We'll swipe it. Oh. And we got her.
As it turns out, this meadow at the foot of the Kleskin Hills is one of the last remaining bits of native prairie. The hills themselves are eroded like the hoodoos of Drumheller, and one can even find dinosaur bones there. But it's the butterflies that have captured Margot Hervieu's attention.
I'm interested in these remnant native grasslands, and there are about 8 species of butterfly that have populations that are found commonly in the prairies of southern Alberta and Saskatchewan, and then are also found in these pieces of native prairie in the whole Peace River region, along the Peace River itself, and in some of these patches of prairie that remain around Grand Prairie and in Spirit River Fairview area. And so I'm interested in finding out more about these particular butterflies, perhaps figure out who they're related to. Are they related to mountain species or to the grassland species? Are they separate subspecies, perhaps? And also figure out how they're using the prairie habitats, perhaps provide information for land managers so we can maintain the prairie and make sure that it remains viable for these species.
What are these species?
As I said, there are about 8 species altogether. There's a couple of arctics and a swallowtail that has been identified as a subspecies that's unique to this area and is definitely of interest to people looking at species at risk. There are also a couple of hairstreaks and a couple of little skippers.
How is it that you set up your study? What do you do on a daily basis?
Well, what we've done is set up 4 transects, which are basically walks in the woods, walks in the grassland. We have a transect at Kleskin Hill Natural Area here east of Grand Prairie. There's also another one on a small native prairie site west of town out near Saskatoon Island Provincial Park. We have a site along the Peace River near Fairview, and also another one up on the hills above the town of Peace River. And those transects are visited on a weekly basis, and basically we record all of the butterflies that we see during the walk time as we move along the transect. The transects are also divided into sections so we can compare different habitat types, and we've done plant analysis along those transects as well so we can see what kinds of plants might be most important to the butterflies. They need plants for laying eggs, they need plants for flowers that they can get nectar from, and they also need protection from the weather and that kind of thing.
What is the life cycle of the different butterflies?
Butterflies all have the kind of textbook life cycle that we learn about, where they have an egg, a caterpillar, a pupa, and then an adult. The thing that's neat about the different species that we have around here and lots of places is that they overwinter at a different stage in their life cycle, depending on the species. So some might overwinter as an egg, others as a cocoon or a pupa, and others as adults. And so you get different butterflies appearing at different times during the summer, and they also are using their habitats in different ways.
Now, why does it have to be on the native grasslands? Why not just anywhere?
Well, the species that I'm looking at happen to depend on specific plants that are native grassland species. The Alberta Arctic, for example, lays its eggs on native grasses, and so without those grasses, then it won't use just like your cultivated lawn or somewhere like that. A couple of species we've got are called hair streaks, and they are associated with patches of Saskatoon and chokecherry that you find along the native grassland areas, and so they're dependent particularly on those plants. The butterflies also, and a couple of these species, depend on different plants for nectaring as well, and the native prairie has a much higher diversity of wildflowers than a cultivated site would have, and so there's a really good diversity of habitat for these butterflies.
What are some of the things that you found out this year?
Well, this year mostly we were trying to just get the transect set up and try to figure out how the best methods would work and that kind of thing. We certainly are confirming associations like the hair streaks being found in the Saskatoon patches. You can walk for miles and then you hit a Saskatoon patch and there's the hair streaks. So those kinds of things. Just trying to figure out what particular plants they may be using for nectaring. We're making observations when we see butterflies nectaring at flowers, what flowers they particularly like. And it certainly does look like diversity is an important thing for them.
100 years ago, this place was covered with native grasslands, and now it's just down to a smidgen of its former self. What impact has that had on the butterfly population?
Well, certainly these species are restricted to those little patches that are left. The Peace River itself has quite a bit of native prairie along the south-facing slopes, but a lot of those areas are under pressure for agriculture still. Even if it's not being cultivated, then it's still being used as rangeland. And if you've laid your eggs on grasses and then the cows come along and eat all the grass, then that's going to affect your population as well. So those are the kinds of things, there may be ways, strategies that ranchers can use to maintain the health of their grassland and also make it a really good place for their cattle. So kind of a juggling act there.
This year you've set up your transects. What happens in future years?
Well, the thing about insects is that their populations fluctuate a lot from year to year, depending on the weather and all kinds of other factors. So it's really important to have a number of years of information before you really can make any strong conclusions about this. So we're hoping to be able to continue to get funding to maintain the transects. And we're also working with a professor at the University of Alberta who's doing genetic studies, and he's looking at some of the genetic relationships between the Peace River populations and prairie populations. And so he may be able to give us more information about whether these butterflies might be actual subspecies and that kind of thing.
Butterflies don't just come out any old time, do they? It makes your research a little bit difficult in terms of timing. Why is that?
Well, there's a couple of challenges. One is that they have to have nice sunny days. So it's a little bit of, you have to plan your week to make sure that you're going out on days when it's not going to be raining and not too windy. But it's pretty nice to sit out in a wildflower meadow on a beautiful sunny June day and watch the butterflies. You also get different species at different times of year. The adults are only actually flying for 3 or 4 weeks while they're laying their eggs. And so if you want to go and find a particular species of butterfly and you don't get out during the right few weeks, then you're going to miss it and have to wait till next year.
Do the butterflies migrate at all?
None of the butterflies that we have regularly in Alberta migrate. Many people are familiar with the monarch butterfly, which is more common in eastern North America, and they migrate all the way from Ontario right down to Mexico where they winter. We do have a few summer visitors that hatch out in the United States, and then as the summer progresses, they'll move further and further north, but they can't survive the winter, and so we just get them on particular years where they've moved into the province this far.
How then, if there are similar species up here at Grand Prairie as the ones that are down in southern Alberta, but it's not prairie all the way through, how did they get up here then if they don't migrate?
Well, there's a couple of different theories. A lot of northern Alberta was grassland before the last ice age, and then after the ice melted, so when the ice came down, those grasses would have moved into places like the mountains or further south. And then when the ice melted, the grasses were able to reinvade a lot of Alberta. And then as the climate cooled again, there was sort of a warm spell after the Ice Age, and then it got a little bit cooler again. And so then the forest kind of moved in and filled in the gap between the southern prairies and the area around Peace River. Things like soil and local climate, fires, even grazing from buffalo would have helped to maintain the grasslands in the Peace region that had stayed here. And there's still lots of questions about exactly where that grassland has come from, and things like the butterflies, their relationships with other creatures in the mountains or the prairies, perhaps other insect groups as well, can all shed a little bit of light on perhaps where that original grassland came from.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was biologist Margot Hervieux. Her butterfly work is funded by the Alberta Conservation Association. Margot is also the president of the Peace Parkland Naturalist Society. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you've heard during the program are available as audio files and as written transcripts from our website. The web address is innovationalberta.com. Also, you can keep up with events in Alberta's research and technology community by subscribing to our free weekly online newsletter. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the Alberta Conservation Association, Alberta Ingenuity Fund, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, the University of Lethbridge, the National Institute for Nanotechnology, Alberta Research Council, Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, True North Energy, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, and the Health Sciences Association of Alberta. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.